I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, I have not listened to as much country music and oldies as I did driving an RV from Colorado to Kentucky and back.
Interesting.
It was quite a lot because I was listening to that stuff for mom. And you and I have talked about it in the past. I grew up with country music, and therefore I don't listen to country music anymore. So that was interesting to be sitting there and basically listening to, you know, classic country,
which everybody holds in high regard, even hipsters like the classic country, and they tend to knock down the contemporary country. But your
experience, a swinging door jukebox and a bar stool, my new home has a flashing neon sign. You can always find me here anytime you want to. I'm always here at home till closing time. Shit like that.
I find it an interesting kind of irony, I guess, but I'm probably using the word irony wrong. How often?
That's ironic.
It is. But I find it interesting how often people tend to criticize country music for the lyrics. It's like, it's all about their trucks and blah, blah, blah. And like, and I'm like, I've made that joke a billion times in my life. And sometimes it does get kind of funny. However, as someone who has written some songs in his day, really, whether you're talking about classic country or the modern stuff, I think overall the lyrics are so much better than your typical kind of pop stuff or rock stuff. I'm not saying individually, you know, you put the best example of a really good classic rock song that has really good lyrics and a really good pop song or what have you that has good lyrics. Yes, song for song, things are going to be different. However,
na 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 na. That's a lyric.
I know. Well, I'm even okay with that. I'm okay with the music taking over. But yeah, you probably wouldn't hear a lot of na-nas in country songs. But I think, you know, and maybe this just comes from my background of spending a few years there really working on lyric writing and studying a lot of lyric writing. And what you end up kind of studying is the techniques that a lot of country songs use, because country music, even early on, like in the 60s and 70s or what have you, Nashville became, you know, the big recording town. So all this people just moved there and wrote songs. So there was like this whole big songwriting community there, and it's competitive, really competitive. And so there was a high bar for lyrics, for good songs. And because of that, even your kind of run of the mill stuff, which maybe isn't considered the best, has a certain level of craftsmanship at the least that I think makes it a bit. Now, whether I listen to a lot of country music, that is beside the point. But if you actually sit and analyze the lyrics, I will say that 90% of the time, a country song will make more sense. There, you know, there is more of a writing to it where there is a structure. Yeah, it's a story. Yeah, they're telling a story, and there's a structure where if you analyze a pop song, which you may love, and I'm not saying there's not room for that, because God, I'll say it every time, like Hysteria by Def Leppard is my favorite album. And I think those songs for the time lyrically are pretty good lyrically. But you know, there's some stuff that's weird in it, or just doesn't make a lot of sense, or just what happened. Look, Pour Some Sugar on Me. What does half of those lyrics even mean? You know, it's all some sort of weird sexual metaphor that doesn't really quite hang together, but it's catchy and we all love it. But yeah, I think that's an interesting thing about country songwriting is how overall it's much better than we give it credit for, at least in terms of the lyrics.
So you mentioned the dog, the truck, the, you know, the bottle of booze kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard this song before. I can't tell you who recorded it. I can't even tell you the name of the song, but it came on and I was laughing my ass off. My mom and my brother both knew the song. They'd heard it before. I had never heard it before, but it's something along the lines of the best country song ever, or the perfect country song, something along those lines. I want to say is the name of the song. And, you know, it's this guy and he's telling the story as he's singing about, you know, how his friend wrote this country song and they played it together. And he said, boy, it's almost perfect. It just, you know, it doesn't talk about your mother. It doesn't talk about your truck, your dog, or getting drunk or anything. He said, if it only had that, it would be the perfect country song. And he said, my friend said, you know what? You're right. And so he wrote this part. And then he goes into all of those things, right, where he adds all that stuff to the song. It was the funniest damn thing I'd ever heard. I can't tell you who wrote it, can't tell you who sang it, but I thought that that was really, really funny that they had done that. Now, the other thing is, when I would hit my limit, I would switch to oldies. Because mom, the reason I was doing that is because mom was singing the songs. So, you know, anything I could do to get her engaged and get her actually communicating and talking or singing, I do. So she was singing the songs, and then I would flip to oldies. Because I was using Sirius XM on my phone. And so I flipped it, and then she would, you know, she'd get into the oldies songs. And one of the ones that kept coming up on the oldies channel, do you remember the song Write a Letter, Maria?
Yeah, I do.
Write a letter, Maria. Dun, 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 dun.
It's like a Motown song, right?
Address it to my wife. Dun, 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 dun. And that just kept coming up. Like, it was in the rotation on Sirius. I don't know why, but, like, every time I would flip to the oldies, that was in the mix at some point and would come up. So fast forward to recently, I've been burning through shorter audiobooks. Mm. I've gone through the third Peacekeeper book from Tanya Huff. I believe it's called The Price of Peace. And then I went through the first of the Pern books, The Dragon Riders of Pern. I did, what else did I do? I had a list here, actually. I should look at it. Kitty in the Midnight Hour by Carrie Vaughn, and Six Wakes by Merle Afferty. So the connection here is Six Wakes, one of the main characters is named Maria. And every time she would come on, in the back of my head, I'd hear, write a letter, Maria, dun, 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 address it to my wife, dun, 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 dun. And I'm going, ugh, gotta get that song out of my head. And it never did. And the other thing was, as I'm listening to Merle Afferty narrate Merle Afferty, no one else would have this connection. No one else would have this thing happen to them. But I kept waiting for her to go mess up and say, sorry, Patrick.
I know. She should have really dropped one in there. She's got to have a character in a book called Patrick that does some sort of work for the main character.
Yeah. And I kept waiting for.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on this, Patrick. I have to mention it before it goes away.
So no, go ahead.
we're talking about the country music and the trucks and all that. And I remember this song, I just Googled it. And it's funny because I just remembered a couple of the lyrics. It's great about the world we live in now. You can not even get it right. If you're kind of near it, it'll usually come up. This song came out, and it appears that it came out in 1995, which sounds about right for when I remember it. And it was a country hit, but not like a pop hit. And it is really sort of the cliche taken to the nth degree, so much so that I remember hearing this song in a bowling alley, probably at about this time, and just thinking, that's not real. That's like a Weird Al song or something, right? So the name, so you have to, I'm not saying you have to, this might be work, but I know you often put music at the end. If you can, I think you should search this out, put this snippet of audio. If it's too much trouble, don't do it. But our listeners can at least look it up. The name of the artist is Rhett Atkins. So it's R-H-E-T-T. Atkins, A-K-I-N-S. The name of the song is That Ain't My Truck. Are you familiar with this song, Patrick?
No.
All right. I'm going to read the chorus, just the chorus there, because I'm not going to read the whole song. That ain't my truck in her drive. Man, this ain't my day tonight. Looks like she's in love and I'm out of luck. That ain't my shadow on her wall. Lord, this don't look good at all. That's my girl, my whole world. But that ain't my truck. And it's I remember there's a video for it, I think, too. And it's just like he's driving by his old girlfriend's house and some other dude's truck is parked in the driveway. It's kind of clever. And again, that's the thing. Like, I'm making fun of it, saying it's like a Weird Al song. It's still a good song lyrically. It makes sense. It's just but it's like that's my girl, my whole world, but that ain't my truck. I'm probably getting the melody wrong, but it really stuck with me. But yeah, if you can search that one out, you'd probably just enjoy it for its own sake. But I think our listeners really deserve to hear that one.
So, oh God, that reminded me of something and then I lost it.
Well, that's okay.
What was I going to say?
Well, you were moving on to topics other than country music, which I think.
I was a little bit. I did want to throw out there that I discovered that there's a thing called the Paducah Dog.
Well, I have to hear what that is.
This is your. This would be something that you could eat on your cheat day, John, but I think you would seriously. You would have to sit down and weigh the pros and cons of eating this on your cheat day.
Yeah.
So there's the regular Paducah dog and then there's the large Paducah dog. This is they take a hot dog, a cooked hot dog, and they cut it in half. They put it on a hamburger bun, smother it with chili and cheese and onions, and then grill it on a hot grill.
Mm.
It is a cholesterol bomb. And I may or may not have eaten one. And it may or may not have been the greatest fucking thing I've ever eaten in my life.
I
have to avoid them for the rest of my life.
As you're describing it, I'm like, I would eat that. I would totally eat that. That's not...
Tons of butter. I mean, they put butter on the bun as they're grilling it and stuff.
Hey, man, that's what cheat day's for. Oh my God. Good. I would at least have a couple of bites of that. I don't know if I'd want to deal with that being in my system for the whole day, but I would certainly have a couple bites of it at least.
Well, and then the large one is it's a hot dog and a half on a bigger bun.
Nice. I had this group of friends in college. And in New Jersey, we have Wawa's in New Jersey or Wawa's in Denver.
I don't know.
Okay.
What is it?
Wawa's is just a convenience store. It's like, you know, like a 7-Eleven or whatever. And it's funny because in New Jersey, I'm not sure where they are now, but for a long time you had to get far enough south. Like they didn't even have them where I was. They were sort of like South Jersey. And then I think they went into some of the states below that. Anyway, they're just a convenience store. You just imagine a 7-Eleven or what have you. Quick check. They sold hot dogs there, as those places do, and they had a ton of condiments. And my friends, this sort of tradition that they started, I guess one of them just did it as kind of like a joke one night. They started getting these things, which they started calling whooper dogs. And all basically what they did, I think this was more just to annoy the person behind the counter or whoever was working there making the hot dogs. They just asked for every single condiment that was behind the counter. Now, not even just hot dog condiments, like everything else. So, you know, it would be what you would expect, your ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise, like, you know, all the onions and relishes and things like that. But it would also just be things like peanut butter and jelly and but they called it a whooper dog because all of that stuff would just whoop into just a substance that became a different thing. And they would, it's disgusting. Look, I never tasted it. Didn't want to taste it. I was like, I'm going to puke if I eat that thing. But
I remembered my last thought on the country music thing. So my mother's cousin, and I think it's fine to mention his name, is Gary Hall. And he has written a ton of songs and tried to get them either recorded, you know, in Nashville. He would always send them to Nashville. And I believe he actually did get one or two songs published and like recorded.
Cool.
So when you talk about the competition in Nashville, I mean, he's close to my mom's age, so 60s or 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the thing he did most of his life. You know, like he was constantly writing songs. and I believe sending them off to Nashville.
Nice.
Trying to get them recorded. So I think it is very competitive there.
Oh yeah, it's a whole, and it's been like that for a long time. It's a really competitive world, and most country music artists, I think there are some that just flat out write their own songs, but
sure,
they have. I think the more likely scenario is that they co-write with these professional writers, so they'll be put in a room with one to three other writers at a time, and they book it like their appointments, like they're working for a marketing company or whatever. It's like, oh, we're gonna have a writing session between 1 and 3, and we'll see what we can do. And they knock out these songs. And I think my understanding of how it works with a lot of them is, obviously some artists are very good writers and they can do their thing, and it is an actual co-write. But I think what would happen a lot is that whatever the sort of songwriter there was, not the artist, would essentially like interview the artist to kind of get them to talk about maybe some experiences that they've had or relationships or what have you. And then I think the two or three writers then like knock out the song in the room while the artist was in there, with probably not a whole lot of input from the actual artist. But I think what country music eventually realized was that people, the audience that was listening to this stuff, wanted the artist to have some hand in the writing, just because they wanted to have it appear authentic and that, like, oh, they're telling stories from their life and there I can really relate to it. But the actual craft of writing the song, I'm sure there's, you know, various levels of an actual co-write versus just like, my boyfriend broke up with me and I'm really sad about it. And then, you know, they would just knock out a song that artist would like. But it is really competitive. But at the time, I don't know how it is in the world now, but at the time, if you placed certain songs on certain albums, you would do very well financially for yourself. But I think it took a long time to get there, and not most people didn't get there. It's kind of like trying to be an author, same deal. You know, some people get real successful at it. A lot of people don't. So you're talking about your audiobooks. That sounds cool, though. I've been listening to audiobooks again too, but I'm still on my nonfiction kick. I'm trying to figure out a way to work fiction back into my life. It's kind of been a while now.
I took a break before the Kentucky trip. I took a break from fiction because I started listening to the cable news channels on Sirius because I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I didn't realize that I could do that just on a phone or on a desktop computer. This is the same account that's in my car for the free preview, right?
Oh, right, right.
I bought the new car, I get the free preview. I didn't realize that you could also take that and extend that free preview to an app on your phone, log into a website. So that was when all the Kavanaugh stuff was happening, mm-hmm. With the Supreme Court. So I indulged my inner political junkie and just was listening nonstop to all the stuff that was going on, mm-hmm. and kind of took a break. And then the only reason I got back into fiction was because I found out Tanya Huff had a new Peacekeeper book. Mm. And I wanted to listen to that. So
cool. Yeah. I'm in the middle of a real long nonfiction book right now, an audio book. And I'm
Brandon Sanderson wrote a nonfiction book.
No, funny that you mentioned that, because I know he did come out with a new book that, surprise, getting good reviews. Not a Cosmere book though. It's a science fiction. I don't even. It looks a little young adulty, but I'm not sure. So that's on my radar too. I do want to make room for fiction, because I think it's an important part of anybody's reading diet. But there's so much nonfiction that I'm into and interested in. I'm finding it hard to get back on the fiction bandwagon. The only fiction I've ingested recently is the Star Wars books, the Thrawn novel, which was good. But I think that's the last two fiction books that I read were both Star Wars books. It was that Thrawn book, and it was the last shot, the Han Solo book, not the novelization that Murrow wrote, but the one that Daniel Jose Older wrote. and they're fine, but they, I can nitpick them as I would with any Star Wars book, even though I read most of them, is that, you know, they're limited in what they can do because they're using characters that we know how their story ends, or we're not supposed to know how their story ends. You know, it's not as a pure read where the author can do what he wants with them. There is limitations put on them. And there is oftentimes in Star Wars books, there's a lack of stakes, right? Because, right. Well, we know they're making it out of it. So I think that's really, I think some authors are really good with working within those confines and can still tell a great story. But I think it's a real challenge. And I think overall, as much as I love Star Wars and the Star Wars books, I think I like it when there's higher stakes and the author can tell a more complete story. I forget, there was one bit of writing advice I remember coming across many years ago where as an author, you're supposed to be asking yourself these questions while you're writing your book. And the big one is, if this is not the most important story in this character's life, stop writing this story and start writing that one. And I think that's really true. And I think, unfortunately, with the Star Wars books, they're not the most important stories in those characters' life. The movies are. So I think that's some of the issues that you run into. So that's where I'm at. But I got a couple good ones sitting here. I have that book, Kings of the Wild by Nicholas Eames, which everybody that I know just keeps telling me that I should read that one because it's essentially a fantasy book that if you're a heavy metal fan, that you'd love. So like Rob Bedford and a bunch of other people just online, just authors that I follow that I like a lot. All of them have been really praising this book for over a year now, and it's sitting there and I do have to just get to it, I think.
So happy birthday, Rob Bedford. We're recording this a couple days after your birthday, and you're going to hear this a couple weeks after your birthday, but happy birthday.
Yes. Yes, Rob. Happy birthday. We can, I don't know how Gail Carriger sensitive we need to be right now, but I wasn't thing. Maybe Gail, at this point in the show, you see that there is another live action Star Wars thing that got announced. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One that to your point has no stakes and is no high stakes because we know it's going to happen to the character.
Exactly.
So do you actually care now?
It's funny because now you just turned it around on me because I think you're right. You're correct.
Cassian Andor, right?
Yes. It's going to be Cassian Andor in the early days of the Rebellion.
Rebellion.
And
A spy thriller.
Yes. And that's a really good point. However, I thought he was one of the strongest parts, and I liked Rogue One a lot, and I liked everybody in it. All those actors were great, but I thought he was. I remember on the second or third viewing of that movie, really being like, "This guy's a good actor. Like this, I really like what he's doing here," and so I'm excited to see him. K2SO has to be in it, right? You have to have Alan Tudyk doing K2SO, right? I mean, that's the droid. He's got to be in it.
Don't know.
He's got to. Because I think there, right then, you just have a nice buddy relationship that I think is going to really, could really carry that show. I mean, they did not make anything. I think this was, I've heard some other podcasts and various blog posts and stuff written about this. So Bob Iger, who's the head of Disney. So often these, we find out about new shows, new things that are coming out, whether it's a Marvel thing or a Star Wars thing or what have you. They just start calling them IgerCon now. Have you heard this thing?
No.
Well, because Bob Iger is the head of the company, and I don't know how often he's even supposed to be doing this, but I guess he's the head of the company, so no one's going to argue with him. But instead of doing it like, oh, we'll announce this new Star Wars series at Comic-Con or Star Wars Celebration or at this event, or we'll, you know, this stuff ends up getting announced either when Bob Iger is in some kind of big corporate meeting where the shareholders are asking stuff, like some kind of stock call or something, or sometimes where just reporters will catch him walking out of a building and they'll ask him some questions. And it'll be like, oh yeah, we got a new Star Wars show coming. So they call him IgerCon.
He hasn't been fired yet?
Well, he's the head. He's the head entrepreneur. No. I think.
Did you hear that they fired Mark Ruffalo?
No.
The Russos have been talking about how they fired him because he spoiled Avengers 4 on Jimmy Fallon's show. And people aren't sure if they're.
I think that's
if
all.
They're joking
bit.
Or not, because basically Ruffalo was on Jimmy Fallon's show, and then afterwards he tweeted begging Jimmy Fallon to redact what he said because he had screwed up and spoiled Avengers 4. And the Russos responded by saying, "You're fired." And in subsequent interviews, they're like, "Ruffalo, yeah, we fired him. He's fired."
Yeah, no, I think that's all a bit that they're all doing, but it's funny. It's funny. No, because I think if they like really actually did that, there's like legal implications.
Well, obviously what he needs to do is he needs to get really political on his Twitter account and very vulgar.
Yeah.
And then they'll fire him.
Yeah. Yes, they will. Apparently they will. I'm excited.
Hi, Chuck.
Yeah, I know. I am excited about that. And well, let me ask you this, because it's something that's come up quite a bit when we talk about that Disney streaming service. So now we're going to have two live action Star Wars things that are now who knows when they're coming out, because now I'm hearing late 2019 for that service even starting. It was just 2019 for a while. Now it's late 2019. So it's still going to be a while. So you're going to have The Mandalorian. You're going to have this Rogue One period live action series. You're going to have The Clone Wars. You're going to have Marvel shows, which they did.
They canceled Luke Cage and they canceled Iron Fist.
Well,
they said there's not going to be a Defenders 2. They just released Daredevil Season 3. Mm-hmm. They are in production on Jessica Jones Season 3. Mm-hmm. And then both of those shows are up in the air, which is exactly what I predicted would happen. They're getting rid of them all on Netflix to move them all to Disney.
Well, I think that could be what's happening. I think Netflix, because, you know, when Iron Fist got canceled, even though it was kind of a surprise, you're like, well, all right, well, that one... You know, especially the first season, which I haven't seen the second season yet, but especially the first season was pretty panned. So you're just like, all right, that makes sense. And then when Luke Cage got canceled, it's like, ooh, that's kind of surprising because people like that one a lot. But then I thought like, oh, you know what they're going to do? They're going to do the Heroes for Hire show. And they're just going to basically combine the two shows, and that makes sense. Although I don't know if that's really what's going to happen. I think this is Netflix now that Disney's streaming stuff is going on. I think they feel like, why are we going to promote your characters on our station?
I don't think it's that at all. Because the Disney deal with Netflix ends soon.
Yeah.
The one with all the movies and everything,
sure.
They're going to move everything. It just makes sense for them, and I've said this all along, to move everything to their own streaming platform. Mm-hmm. We need to have as fractured a landscape of streaming as possible to screw every single subscriber over as much as possible. You know, that's the model that everyone's going to. And so it makes complete and total sense to me that they use Netflix to springboard and launch these things. Mm-hmm. And now that they're going to do their own, they're going to move it all over to that platform. And that way they can control it and have all the money and not have to give any money to Netflix.
I think with all those shows, with Daredevil and all of them, I mean, I believe Netflix owns part of those shows. Like, I think that was a joint venture in terms of their money is put into it. So I don't think what has been made so far can just fly over to Disney. I really don't think it will. I mean, now
there's just like with everything else, there's some sort of licensing agreement.
Sure. And I'm sure.
And however that licensing agreement is structured is what's going to define that. So it sounds to me like Marvel can pull the plug at any time they want on new production, which is what I think they're doing. Right, they already had Daredevil Season 3 in production. They already had Jessica Jones Season 3 in production. So, you know, they had greenlit both of those. But from what I read, Marvel said no to all the scripts for Luke Cage Season 3.
Interesting.
They had the scripts. They had the entire show planned out, the entire season. They knew where they wanted to take it. And where it broke down was in the scripts.
Mm.
And so Marvel just said, no, we're not going to do it. So the show's been canceled. That doesn't mean Netflix has the exclusive rights to the character of Luke Cage. Right? I mean, they've canceled it. There's a licensing agreement. If usually the way these things work, and that's why we got the Spider-Man reboots, is that if the production company doesn't have something in production, the licensing rights revert back to the rights holder, which in this case is Marvel Disney. So while those shows have been canceled, that does not stop them from rebooting the shows and doing something completely different with Luke Cage and Iron Fist on the Disney streaming service.
I can definitely see a reboot happening. I don't think you're going to see a continuation of what was happening on Netflix. I think those shows are just going to be what they are. And I think they're going to just stay on Netflix because I think they... Now, again, Netflix can choose to sell them back to Disney or what have you. But I think even, you know, it's interesting because it seems like they're getting canceled kind of out of the blue and with not a lot of time to develop it. But when you think about it, if you add all of the shows up, it's quite a bit of content. Because now you got...
It is. And you keep saying out of the blue, but at least from my perspective, it's not.
No.
I predicted it.
Oh, I know that.
I predicted it months ago.
No, I think what I'm saying is that it's now been a couple of years, and right now there's three seasons of Daredevil. There's two of Jessica Jones. There's two of Luke Cage. There's two of Iron Fist. There's one of Punisher, and there's one of Defenders. So you got like 10 seasons of Marvel shows sitting mm-hmm. there, and there's going to be a couple more because, as you said, some of them are in production, so you're probably going to get two or three more seasons of stuff because you're going to probably get that Jessica Jones one, and I think there's a second season of Punisher in development too, so you're going to get those. So by the end you'll have over 10 seasons, and I suspect that Netflix is just going to just hold on to that, and that'll be legacy content that'll be there for people to discover. You would hope that they can try to wrap it up, but I don't think they're going to. I don't think there's going to be like, we'll do another thing, because they've said as much that there's not going to be any more Defenders, or it's been implied Correct. Very clearly, at least anyway. But what would be nice is if they had some sort of big Defenders thing, and we're like, we'll wrap everything up in one season of Defenders, and it'll sit there as one big movie. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
Right.
One of the things shows that I did watch recently that we had mentioned a couple of shows ago, which I loved, and I think you really liked it too. Another Netflix original is the Dragon Prince. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I really loved that a lot. I thought that was excellent. And I remember we were talking about how there was a little bit of criticism for the animation. Boy, I didn't really have any problem at all with the animation. I thought it was fine, but I mean, maybe my I could see it was a little herky jerky at points, but nothing that took me out of the story. Right. You know, but God, I love the you know, if an Avatar alumnus worked on something, I'm all in, because I love the Voltron thing that they got going on there, and I really like the Dragon Prince. And funny thing with the Dragon Prince is the voice actor for was Callum is the name of one of the leads in that. Mm-hmm. Same guy that does the voice for Sokka. Was Sokka the name from
I believe it was.
Yeah, Sokka. same guy. So it was I loved it just to hear Sokka's voice again, because it's been a while. But really well done. And you know, I don't know, for me it was like, I don't know if it's just the week or two that it took me to get through it, it was just really comforting. But it was, you know, it was kind of like animated, kid-friendly Game of Thrones. You know, I know that's like a real shorthand for it, and probably not giving it its due, but really enjoyable. And I don't know, I'm glad that it got greenlit for another season, because I loved it. I thought it was great.
I thought it was great, and I think you were getting around to a question of the Disney streaming service, am I going to do?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was
good. And my stance really hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. I where I am right now, I can't afford to go to 27 different streaming services to get the 27 different shows that I want to watch. Mm-hmm. So I probably won't.
Mm. You wouldn't even.
And it's like, it's very similar to my video game consumption, right? Mm-hmm. I don't buy video games when they come out. And part of it is I don't like the new model with video games, which is, here's the game, and then to really enjoy the game, you need to buy this downloadable content, and you should get this exclusive from Best Buy, and this one from GameSpot. I just wait for the Game of the Year edition, mm-hmm. and I wait for that to go on sale.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm usually way beyond the curve
right.
on my video game consumption. Like I'm buying games that came out 2, 3, 4 years ago. I don't like the way that industry has changed and become so fractured in how they deliver the content. I grew up on, you went out and bought a video game, you got the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go out and buy a video game, you've got a base version of the game, and then again, to enhance it, you got to get these 10, 20 other little things all over the place to get the skins and the this and the that and the extra content and, oh, you know, do this dungeon and do this and that. And it's just a pain in the ass. So I just wait. I'm kind of in the same boat when it comes to this. Like, I'm looking at all these different things as annoying. Mm-hmm. Annoying as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's because every single one of these content companies now, right, that's what they basically are saying – and they're not wrong. Our content is valuable, and they don't want to. They want to control the price. They want to control the audience. They want to make sure that if you are subscribing to their content, that you're subscribing to their content. And they also, I think, feel, perhaps justified, perhaps not, that their content is why you're going to X platform. So HBO thinks that the reason you're going to whatever platform you're going to is because Game of Thrones is on that platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to launch their own platform so that you can specifically and exclusively watch Game of Thrones if you want to. And now you don't have to go to that other platform. Fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same concept across the board now. It's like, oh, well, you want British TV? Go to BritBox. That's where you can find British TV. Well, what about BBC America? Oh, don't worry about BBC America. Just come to BritBox and pay for BritBox here. Well, what about Netflix? Oh, no. You know, internationally, yeah, we're going to put our stuff on Netflix. But here in America, you know, we know that you want your own separate service called BritBox. We don't. We want Netflix. You see, it just goes over and over and over.
Well, let me put it this way. Let's say the Disney streaming service launches 6 months, a year down the line. You got one or two of the live action Star Wars things. You got the Clone Wars, they've all run. You've got the Tom Hiddleston Loki series that's up there. There's five things that I know are in your wheelhouse of what you might want to watch. You wouldn't turn it on 6 months to a year down the line, pay for a month or two and watch those series. I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying like you would, or is that too much of a hassle where you don't want to worry about turning it on and turning it off again and all that?
Where I am sitting right now, mm-hmm. I would not do it.
Okay. Well, that's,
I won't.
That's
because it's monetary. It's about the money.
Well, they're all about it.
At this point.
Everything is about
money. No, I understand, yeah. But like I pay for, it's like,
well, you know what I'm forgetting here? I'm forgetting that you share your house with other people where you're
exactly
for a lot of cable, and I am not. So
exactly. Me, that's why I said, yeah, where I'm sitting right now and the way I have to spend my money and the things that I have to get, I can't do these things. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have that kind of cord cutter
right
availability to me. So I have Netflix and I have Prime, and mostly I have Prime because of Prime shipping.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? And the video part is just an added bonus.
Yeah. I don't even know what cable would cost at this point, but I know my bill was not even cut in half. It was like cut in a third. Like it was, yeah, two thirds less when I just went down to, just having internet. And we had already had Netflix and Amazon, so I didn't even count those. The only thing I added was Hulu, which is like $12 a month or whatever it is. And so to me, it's so much cheaper. So to add these things, especially if it's only going to be on for a month or two, to add something for $10 or whatever it is, $15 sometimes, not a big deal. But I'm also not paying an extra $80 on top of that for cable.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because I just had this conversation with some friends and they were talking about how this is a married couple, and how they always did the cable game, which is, you know, you get cable and it starts off and they say it's going to be, you know, $29.99. And then if you bundle it, it's going to be X, right? So what they want you to do is they want you to bundle your television, your internet, and your home phone. And my thing is, I don't have a home phone.
Right.
I don't want a home phone. I don't have a landline. I don't want one. I don't need one. And it's just an additional cost. And the way the cable company looks at it is, well, we're a telecom now. And if you don't bundle it, we're going to charge you more.
Yes. I looked into that at the time when I cut this. Yeah. I was like, well, what if we just get rid of the phone? Well, it'd actually be $10 more a month. Well, yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah. So for a while there, I actually had a landline phone number that I didn't even know I had, because in an effort to get me the best deal possible, the cable guy just signed me up. Mm-hmm. And how I discovered it was when I had an issue and I called in, it didn't recognize my phone number, right? So a lot of these companies now, when you call in, they recognize your phone number and they immediately pull up your account. They couldn't find my account. And I said, well, I've had the same phone number, you know, since I moved to Denver. So I've had it forever. And it's always been associated with my account. I don't understand why you can't find my account. They keep searching, and they finally find it. And they're like, oh, well, you know, and here's why we have your phone number as XYZ. And I said, that's not my phone number. It's never been my phone number. I've never had that phone number. And they're like, well, we assigned it to you when you signed up for phone service. Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, this couple was telling me that they play the cable game, which is you are on a contract price. Your contract is up. Boom. Now you're paying $100 a month. So at that point, you call and you threaten to cancel. And the person that you're talking to can't help you, but they forward you to retention specialist. Yeah. Yes. Who then gets you whatever deals they have available to keep you on. And you don't go back to that $30 a month price, which actually costs you like $50-$60 a month. But maybe you go down to $75-$80, mm-hmm. right? And they throw in HBO for 3 months or something like that.
Right.
She said they don't do that anymore.
I don't.
They actually have, they hardline it now. And they're like, well, where the fuck else are you going to go? You either do this or you don't.
Yeah, that was and I did it a few years ago too. What they were offering, what the retention specialist was offering, was not much. It was not a tempting offer at all. It was basically like, well, you could do the bear package where it's, you know, you'll get your, they were really trying to sell me on News 12, which is like the local news in New Jersey. They're like, well, don't you want that in case there's like a hurricane? I'm like, I have an internet and a phone. I could find all this out. I don't need to have, you know, news to, like, that was their big selling point. It was like, don't you want that? Sure. It's like, no, I don't care about that. Like, yeah, they don't have as much, because I think what you are finally seeing is that, and it's probably been a while now, but I think most of the cable companies have long since realized that they are getting into a different business now, and they realize that, you know, their old way of doing things is not working anymore. And while there are still many, many, many people who still watch traditional cable and probably will be for a while, eventually those numbers will continue to decline, and they are basically going to be an internet company, and they're going to figure out a way to, you know, charge you more for that, or charge you for different kinds of services around that. But I think they realized, let's not try to hold on so hard to the cable side of things. Let's just make sure that we keep them as an internet customer, and we'll figure that. I think that's kind of the transition that they're going through now, where they realize that there's a lot of people like me. Not as many as you'd think. I still think there's a ton of people out there that still have cable. I bet if I talk to 10 of my adult friends, who aren't in their 20s, anybody that's like over 35 or something, I bet most of them still have cable.
Well, and I would go further and say that I believe that it's a, I don't want to get too political, but I believe it's a income stream thing.
Sure.
And I think the less income you have, the more likely you are to have cable.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think these cord cutting things are something that more people who have with different and larger incomes tend to go towards, because they can also afford high speed internet.
Right.
And not everybody can. I mean, there's still a disconnect there with, you know, high speed internet in especially rural areas.
Oh, sure.
But are you familiar with the brouhaha going on right now between Dish and HBO?
No.
So are you familiar with the merger of Time Warner, AT&T, and DirecTV?
Oh, you know, so, I think I am. I think I do know what you're going to say. But yeah, you can give us the brief.
So HBO and Cinemax are part of that. Right. They're now owned by Time Warner. And one of the things that they're doing is, I guess they're giving away HBO and Cinemax as part of some like Direct Now, the direct streaming service or something like that DirecTV has. And potentially also with AT&T subscribers right now, that AT&T has the entertainment thing that they're doing. And you get channels and you get unlimited streaming on their service and all this kind of stuff. So there's all these different packages that those companies now that they're intertwined are kind of doing. And Dish is notorious for, and I have Dish, Dish is notorious for having, whenever a contract is up, basically putting their foot down and saying, you're not going to screw our subscribers. We're not going to do what you want to do. Like, someone will come back and say, well, we want $1 million more per year from you. And Dish is like, nope. And they turn you off and you're no longer on their service, right? Until you come back with quote unquote, a reasonable contract negotiation. So according to Dish, HBO and Cinemax, HBO basically came back and said, in order to have us on your service, you now have to guarantee us X number of subscribers that you're going to pay for, whether you actually have those subscribers or not. And Dish said, we're not going to pay you for subscribers that we don't have. You know, we'll pay you for the subscribers who actually subscribe, but you know, if it's 1 million people subscribing to HBO, we'll pay you for 1 million people. And HBO's like, well, we want a guarantee of 2 million. And I'm just making those numbers up. You know, no matter what, you're always going to pay us for 2 million people, whether you have that many subscribers or not. And Dish said no. And so according to HBO, they came back and said, well, look, well, let's keep the existing contract going until we can figure this out and come to an agreement. And Dish said, okay. And then at the 11th hour, Dish said, no, fuck you, and kicked him off the service. Mm. That's HBO's version of the story. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on, except that it's the usual Dish kind of stuff where their only negotiation tactic is, fuck you, we're taking you off our service.
Right. Yeah.
And so right now there's no HBO, no Cinemax, any of that kind of stuff on any of the Dish platforms, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, that's – well.
So no Game of Thrones for you.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. I would just do it on the HBO app. Anyway, well, we hope you all enjoyed another episode of John trying to convince Patrick to get the Disney streaming service unsuccessfully.
I also didn't get CBS All Access, and I also haven't gotten the new DC one. So.
Well, the CBS one, that's a big one, because I know how much you love Star Trek, so I'm surprised that you haven't. Well, you said you watched some of the episodes somewhere, like they were like...
I did the free preview 2 years ago for Mile High Con, because I had a panel to talk about the Star Trek Discovery, mm-hmm. and I needed to actually have seen the show, so I did the free preview, and then when the free preview was over, I never signed up.
Well, that's telling. It's quite telling. But anyway... thanks, everybody. Sorry we've missed some episodes recently. Everything's fine, everybody. But, you know, as everybody goes through, there are some things in the real world that kind of prevented us from putting out as our normal run of episodes. But hopefully we will be back on track now for a while, and you should be getting our regular output. I always brag about our consistency, and I think we still were relatively consistent, but we missed a couple.
And you say that just before Thanksgiving.
Oh, right. We're probably going to miss that week. Don't we usually put one out on that, or do we usually not put one out on that?
I think we skip the holidays usually.
All right. Well, we're very inconsistent these days. I'm really sorry. But there was a really, you know, not to be vague booking, but like, you know, everyone has stuff to deal with. And I think, you know, I'll only speak for myself, but you know, people go through some things sometimes. Everything's good, you know. No one should be alarmed.
Sometimes things happen. John, sometimes things just flood in, and there's nothing you can do about it, except attempt to clean it up.
Yes.
And you can't always clean up, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
no.
You know, and
right, exactly.
It's just the way it goes.
Exactly. But we're good, and hopefully we'll just keep pumping out our episodes in the way that we do. So everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us, the people that already are. If you're not, consider going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, where you can support us. Patrick, what would you like to leave our listeners with this week?
The only other thing we didn't talk about was Mile High Con, so maybe we'll talk about that in a future episode, because I did get to go to that, and that was fun.
Okay. Yeah, let's definitely remind me of that before we start doing our Just the Two of Us, and we can definitely get into that. That'll be good. All right, everybody. See you next time. Have a great week.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.